Hello and welcome to this Elastico mini podcast with myself, Christopher Atkins. And today I'm joined by James Young of the Tall Coconuts blog. It's only a short one today, James, but we've got plenty to talk about. So we're going to start off with the news section as always. And where else can we start, James, but the big news of the week, the biggest story in Brazilian football, and that was the big match at the top, Atlético hosting Fluminense, second against first. And tell us what happened then, James.
Well, I'm glad to say sometimes these games can disappoint, but this was an absolute classic. Atlético had to win. At the start of play, they were 9 points behind with only seven games left. So a victory was essential. A draw would be no use at all. And I sent a message, a tweet during towards the end of the first half, saying that Atletico had maybe produced a perfect half of football, because I think they had 15 shots on goal. They had a couple against the post, I think. One goal was disallowed for a slightly dubious free kick, perhaps, which we'll maybe come back to later. Diego Cavalieri was making sort of save after save and goal. They committed two free kicks, if I'm not mistaken, in the first half, which is remarkable. And then Fluminense had one shot, which didn't really threaten. So they dominated completely the first half, but it was the perfect half, except they failed to score.
It was quite remarkable, as you said. The woodwork was struck, and Cavalieri, it was probably one of the best halves I can remember from a goalkeeper, that first half.
Wasn't it? Because the pressure was intense. You know, Atletico went for it right from the start, and then Cavalieri looked like he was kind of manning a coconut shy at one stage, because the ball was just peppering his goal. But he held firm. So we went into halftime goalless. And as is often the way, there's an expression in Brazil that says "quem não faz leva," which is, if you don't score, you're gonna concede. And that was exactly what happened. I think after about 10 minutes of the second half, Wellington Ney, he's had a terrific season for Fluminense, was set free through the middle and then poked it in. And you could hear, it was that classic away goal situation. The deafening noise in the Independencia suddenly was cut, like there'd been an electricity cut. And all you could hear was the pocket of Fluminense fans cheering in the background. And at that stage, it looked like it. You know, you would think the away goal would have knocked the stuffing completely out of Atletico. But especially given perhaps their failures of the past, because they do have something of a reputation for cocking things up, if you'll excuse my language.
it was very much a kind of hit and run feel at that point, but then the game developed a bit more and Atletico came right back into it and midway through the second half, I guess, or getting towards the end of the second half, it looked like they were going to be fairly comfortable at 2-1 up.
Yeah, exactly. If you support this kind of team, and I do, I kind of specialize in this kind of team through the dark days of Man City and then Santa Cruz and then Atlético, you get very used to it, and you get used to the kind of heroic effort and being unrewarded. So I kind of said that it was depressingly predictable that it was 2 minutes ago. And you would have forgiven Atlético maybe for going, okay, we've given it a good shot, we'll concentrate on the Libertadores. But they didn't. Ronaldinho is just as tremendously driven these days in his sort of his pursuit of the Brasileirão title. So they found a second win, and João, the erstwhile Manchester City telegraph pole, took centre stage, scored a real cracker for the equaliser, thumping it in from the corner of the penalty area after Ronaldinho had put him through. And then getting on the end of a Bernard cross for the second. And at that stage, you know, the celebration started again, and Atletico were back in the race and so on. And like you said, you thought it would be plain sailing until the final whistle.
As I'm sure the listeners have worked out, that was never going to be the case. And I can only imagine the look on your face when, with 5 minutes to go, Freddy popped up with that goal, as he's done all season. Whenever Fluminense have really needed a goal, he's generally turned up.
Well, exactly. All you had to do was look around the Independencia to see thousands of people with that kind of look on their face, you know, open-mouthed, crushed, hollow-eyed, you know, staring in disbelief, thinking, we've done so much, and look at this. There's another angle, isn't there, we've talked about before, about kind of paranoia that Fluminense are being favoured by Globo and the CBF and so on. So there's that kind of paranoia as well, that kind of, well, look, here they come and robbed us again. That's the way it goes, you know, just a crushing disappointment. This was the atmosphere. That was 2-2, which was again not a bad result, but it wouldn't be enough for Atletico. It would leave them again 9 points behind with six games left. So they had to win it. And remarkably, that 2 minutes into injury time, they kept going. And 2 minutes into injury time, who else but that man Ronaldinho stepped up. He made a little bit of space on the left-hand side of the box and just floated the most exquisite pass across the penalty area, right onto the formidable forehead of Leonardo Silva, the giant centre-half who's steaming in. And he climbed up as high as some of the mountains that sort of. And you can imagine the scenes of pandemonium in the stands, on the pitch. Coco was being carried aloft by a couple of substitutes. It was a wonderful match, a thrill and a thrilling finale. You know, one of the really great games of this Brasileirão.
And it meant so much to both teams. While Atletico were celebrating at the end, the Fluminense players and coaches were going crazy. The Abel Braga had to be separated from the ref by some military police. It was quite some scenes at the end. In fact, the game broke down after that third goal for Atletico. The referee had to kind of stop proceedings for a while. Well, I think it was Fred G got involved in a fight with Leandro Donizetti.
Well, yeah, I mean, it happens. The thing is, I think we had a situation last week or 2 weeks ago, didn't we, with sport players being sent off after the final whistle. And I hadn't noticed because you get so used to it. You know, it seems at the end of every tense game, there's just pandemonium, and you almost look away, so it becomes so inevitable. But yeah, it kicked off a little bit, not to any great degree. I mean, I've seen a lot worse. Fred was caught using some industrial language on camera as he was being interviewed on his way off the pitch. Abel Braga at least managed to compose himself a little bit afterwards, because he kind of came up with a nice line. He said, you know, we didn't play well, but I thought we'd done enough for a draw. But we were up against a genius, so what can you do? Which I thought was a nice line. It was quite kind of generous, I suppose, under the circumstances, you know, which isn't always common in Brazilian football.
No, and he hasn't been alone in the last few days in the hailing of Ronaldinho, his comeback to form and also his performance in this individual match. In fact, this match, James, we've spoken about the atmosphere and the quality of both sides, the passion of both sides. But in terms of storylines, it was a newspaper writer's dream, in that you had Fredy, the warrior, scoring this late goal, getting very angry. You had Ronaldinho on top form. You had the two young guns in Wellington Nem and Bernat, both scoring, both playing very well. If you were the newspaper editor, you've got quotes and angles galore for your story, for your paper the next day.
No, exactly. It was sort of proper Shakespearean drama. You know, everyone played their part. All the big hitters stepped up. Except for Deco. Deco would be disappointed. Maybe. I mean, maybe it wasn't his kind of game, and Atletico completely swamped the midfield with Leandro Donizetti. I think if we have time, that we can talk about some of the unsung heroes of this Atletico side, because they have quite a few, but they dominate the midfield. So Deco was very much a peripheral figure. But yeah, I mean, Honnold, Fred did his bit despite not a lot of service. He was dangerous, set up a goal, scored a goal. Wellington Nain was the breakaway threat. Bernard was irrepressible, just irrepressible, constantly, you know, scampering away down the left. And I pity with the Fluminense full the right back. I think it's Bruno, isn't it, the right back?
Yeah,
he had a torrid afternoon.
It was quite funny. I think it was either just before or the day after the game. I think Lance did an interview with Bernard, and they said to him, "Well, you're going to be up for a breakthrough of the year. Do you think anyone else can compete with you?" And he said, "Well, I've done well, but I think Wellington Nain will be up there." And then they reminded him, "Oh, Wellington Nain won it last year. He can't win it again." Bernard was just at a loss for who could compete with me for this prize. He's been that far ahead of all the competition for that prize that there really is no question who's going to win it.
Absolutely, no. They can give it to him now. You know, he's been absolutely wonderful. I've seen him in the flesh a few times, and you sort of underestimate the fact of how small he is. I mean, he's 20.
5'5", is it?
Yeah, but doesn't look anything like that. You know, he looks like an 11 or 12 year old, 13 year old. You know, he's tiny, skinny. Has the little sort of slight, you know, not the best, almost if he's going through adolescent. but just a wonderful player. Such speed and energy and control, you know. And I think we haven't sort of touched on this yet, but if he, there's talk, I heard him mention a month or so ago that Atletico would sell him after the Libertadores.
Right.
Assuming there's some big offers, you know, they'll focus on the Libertadores after that, but after that they'll want to cash in because they're not part of the big sort of Rio Sao Paulo conglomerate, if you like, so money is an issue.
Yeah.
So they would probably need to cash in at some stage. But if he stays, or if he goes, if he is a 2013 anything like this 2012, then he's got to be a factor for the World Cup squad come 2014, you know.
Well, I think both of those players that we've mentioned, Wellington Nain and Bernard, will both consider themselves to have a strong chance of getting in that squad now.
Absolutely. I mean, you imagine he'll be sort of 21, 22 by the time the World Cup's around. So if his development continues, he'll be absolutely prime, you know.
That's a point I'm going to come back to later with Rio. I know he was very impressed with Wellington for Sao Paulo, another player who's really pushed his claims for national team selection recently. But while I've got you here with me, James, we'll have a look at the other end of the table just briefly. You're known as a bit of a Northeast Brazil expert, and Sport really kept their survival hopes alive, I guess. Both them and Palmeiras secured wins this weekend. As I think I said to you on Twitter, you can always rely on Cruzeiro to lose to a relegation threatened side. So we helped out Palmeiras there. Both teams have closed in on Bahia. 3 points to Sport and 4 points then to Palmeiras. 6 games to go. Anything can really happen down there.
Well, exactly, and it's a tricky time, isn't it? Because you've got to take each game big, huge. You can set off the cliche klaxon at the moment, but you sort of have to take each game as it comes. Obviously, I can't believe I just said that. But also you've got to look at the fixtures that are coming up on balance. So,
would you say while, 4 years out the window? Just to add in another cliche.
I could talk about people being sick as parrots and being over the moon. So on paper, maybe this weekend was good for Sport and Palmeiras because they picked up 3 points, whereas Bahia picked up one. But then if you look at the fixtures involved, I think Palmeiras and Sport would have to win their games. You know, Atletico and ANC away, if you're not going to win that, then you may as well pack your bags now. And as you say, Cruzeiro are that kind of proverbial gift horse, aren't they, for teams battling relegation, because they're a mid-table side with nothing to play for.
Well, exactly. You
know? So that's exactly who you want to play at this stage. A team that's kind of, you know, looking forward to the beach. So Bahia might have done the best out of this because they, even though Corinthians also don't have a lot to play for, Corinthians in São Paulo is a very difficult game. So Bahia's point away in Sao Paulo, particularly for a team that doesn't travel well, might just be more valuable in the long run than those wins for Sporting Palmeiras. Particularly, I think we talked during the week, didn't we, about Bahia's last three games.
Yes.
Which are Atlético Goianiense, Ponte Preta, and Náutico. So those are three games which they could conceivably get, you know, sort of 7 or 9 points. So it's going to come down to the wire as usual. Palmeiras are making a move, aren't they? Slightly ominously, so that they'll be feeling confident, but they've got some tough games coming up. So even though I made a prediction last week, I wouldn't want to repeat it. Let's put it that way.
You're feeling a bit less confident about your house now, then.
I am. Well, I am because Palmeiras have won a couple of games, haven't they? So the gap has tightened. I'm just looking at the table now. I don't suppose anyone else is going to get sucked in. Are they Flamengo?
No, the only way, I guess, Flamengo, Ponte Preta, and Náutico is going to get sucked in is if they lost every game from now on. Because you would expect them, and I don't know if I mentioned Portuguese, so they're all around there. You would expect them to pick up maybe at least 3 or 4 points from 6 games. So if they pick up that amount of points, then you would think they're safe.
Which is all you need, isn't it, really?
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I think we're looking at those teams there. But, you know, I think, and it comes to the point at this stage of the season, getting the cliches back, that it's points in the bag that really count. So that 4-point lead, as little as it seems, can often prove invaluable.
Yeah, exactly. Particularly, I'm just looking at the number of victories, which is the first tie-breaking factor, isn't it?
Palmeiras are ahead on that one.
Yeah, Palmeiras have 9 wins. So that gives them a slight advantage. Figueirense, we also need to keep an eye on Figueirense. They're playing on Wednesday, aren't they? I mean, if they win, then they're a point behind Palmeiras.
Well, yeah, and they've won 2 of their last 3 as well. And I guess the big thing for them is they've got Aloisio and Ronnie scoring plenty of goals. So if those two can keep up some kind of form, then they will pick up wins in the closing games.
Well, exactly, and they have Botafogo at home on Wednesday, which you would think is winnable. And then looking ahead, they have Portuguese at home after that.
Again, very, very winnable.
If they win those two, then they're sort of straight back in the thick of it.
We were talking about could Ponte Preta get sucked in. Well, they've got Cruzeiro in Campinas next weekend, so I don't think they'll get sucked in anytime soon.
No, they should. They should be able to get something there, shouldn't they?
Other news then, just to kind of round up this section then, James. Neymar's been talking this week. He's distanced himself from DIS suggestions. DIS being the player rights agency who own 40% of his rights. They've suggested that they'd encourage him to move to Europe ahead of 2014. He's distanced himself in quite strong words from those suggestions.
He has, and I think this might be it might be a mistake that some commentators are making. They're kind of looking from above the situation rather than from within the context of Brazilian football. Because if you look from above, if you look from a kind of overall common sense, clear-headed perspective, then we've talked about this before. Of course he should go to Europe. But there are emotional ties involved. It is, you know, he still has a young family, or certainly a kid. He's very happy at Santos. People, again, looking from above, you would look at Santos' calendar next year and say, well, there's not much going on. They're not going to make Libertadores, so it's just the São Paulo State Championship and the Brazilian title. But knowing the way Neymar thinks, knowing his enthusiasm for the game, knowing his love for Santos, he won't think that way. And once the kind of hype machine for the state championship picks up, which whether you like them or not, I mean, it does. They do generate certainly an amount of media interest among the players, the fans, the managers, and so on. So they'll start talking about winning their, I think it's their 4th in a row, isn't it? They've won 3 in a row, is that right?
I think so, yeah. I think they won the first of the 3 when Robinho was back on loan.
Yes, I think you're right. So that talk will start up, and Neymar will start talking about that and start talking about wanting to make history and win his 4th in a row. Okay. I mean, and this... Just to finish on this point, this kind of rivalry and teasing and so on and taunting that goes on is really important in Brazil. Really, really, whether you like it or not, it's a central part of people's lives. Up in Recife, Náutico still talk about winning the Hexa, which was 6 state championships in a row. And that was back in the late 60s, I think. But they talk about it all the time. You know, you'll see banners at their games saying Hexa Luxo, which is the Hexa is a luxury, sort of a luxury for the few. So this kind of history goes back. And even though it probably shouldn't, even though Neymar and his advisors should say, look, let's think about 2014. Let's think about the future. Let's think about your career. His roots are in Brazil. He's your archetypal Brazilian footballer, almost your archetypal Brazilian football fan. And he cares a lot, and his heart is obviously just as important as his head, even though, again, maybe it shouldn't be. So he's probably slightly mystified by all the pressure to leave because, again, rightly or wrongly, he's happy where he is. I'm not defending his position, but if you spend time in Brazil, you can see why he would think that way.
Well, and the other thing here, I guess, James, we've got to look at is even if he stays till 2014, no doubt he'll sign a new contract in the meantime. So I wouldn't read too much into that. That would just be to guarantee Santos a transfer fee at the end of it all. But if he stays until 2014, he'll be 22 at that point, which is younger than, say, Ganso and Leandro Damião are now, or Dede. So it's really no age at all in footballing terms. You'd still have, say, 10 years to play in Europe before even a possible return right at the end of his career. But he'd still have plenty of time on his hands to achieve his goals in Europe. But the other thing is he's spoken a lot, James, about his hopes of winning a Brazil Real title. He's never won it. Yeah. And next year is probably his only chance without the Libertadores before a move to Europe that he is ever going to have a shot at winning it. So that might play heavily in his thinking right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I only got as far as talking about the state championship, but yeah, the focus for the year would be the Brasileirão the in the second half of the year. And it's interesting, isn't it? It's almost taking the form of criticism. This campaign to get Neymar to head to Europe, and I suppose I've been guilty of this as well, which is a little bit odd. I mean, I heard maybe I shouldn't mention any names, but I heard a well-known Brazilian-born football commentator on a certain podcast organised by a national broadsheet in the UK. His first name is Fernando.
I can't think who you mean.
he was sort of. He's a great. I love listening to him, but he was getting very wound up today about Neymar staying and talking about the stupidity of the decision and so on, which seems a little bit odd, really, doesn't it? Because firstly, it's up to the player. I mean, if he's happy at Santos, then why wouldn't he stay? And there's something admirable, isn't there, about finishing your business? You know, so few players do that these days, particularly in Brazil. You know, they'll head off at the first opportunity. But Neymar said no. I'm happy here. Santos have done a lot for me. I love Santos. I want to finish what I want. I want to finish my, you know, what I have to do here. I want to win. I've won the Libertadores. I've won the Brazilian Cup. I want to win the Brasileirão. And that's whether it's advisable or not, given sort of the fast approaching World Cup. But there's something admirable in that, isn't there? I can respect that decision.
And the other thing is, James, and this is on a purely footballing perspective. We've had Jorge Valdano, the former Real Madrid director this week, coming out and saying Neymar's more imaginative than Messi or Ronaldo. He said Messi's got the dribbling ability, Ronaldo's got the power, but Neymar will beat you 10 times and he'll beat you in 10 different ways. Yeah, and he's got a point there, I think. And Muricy came out today, his manager at Santos, and said he agrees Neymar is the most inventive player in the world in terms of he never does the same thing twice. You don't know what's coming. And in that respect, while maybe we've spoken before that Ganso could maybe do with a move to Europe to develop in his playmaker role, we spoke of maybe the need of people like Lucas and Oscar to go to European football. In that respect, Neymar's unique style of play, in a way, that it's so on the spot. Everything seems to come to him at that moment, what he's going to do. In that respect, maybe he's the one who needs the move least.
That's a really interesting point, actually. And maybe the little bit of space, a little bit of extra space that he gets in Brazil is allowing him to build, allowing him to be more creative, allowing him to be more imaginative, and allowing him to build a repertoire that he can, a repertoire of tricks, a repertoire of strategies that maybe he can use to later effect, or to great effect later in his career. That's a really interesting point. I think one of the major problem here is of course the World Cup coming up in 2014 and this state of flux, this state of development that the Brazilian national team is in. If Pato had fulfilled his ability, or Robinho had come through as we'd sort of hoped he would along, you know, a few years ago, or if Adriano had managed to stay on track, and there were more attacking options for Brazil, Neymar would perhaps be, you know, an impact substitute or an option up front instead of carrying the weight of almost 200 million people on his back. And that's where you get this pressure. That's where you get this rush. That's where you get the kind of idea that he can't stay in Brazil because he has to be ready for 2014. You know, how is he going to play against Germany if he's playing against Portuguesa? You know what I mean?
But I know you've written on this for is it World Soccer Magazine? I guess that's where the Kaká and maybe even Oscar with a couple of years at Chelsea behind him then. Maybe the balance of those two's experience, particularly Kaká, and then add in maybe the impudence of Neymar, and maybe that could work for Brazil. Maybe they don't want him rounded off ahead of that tournament.
Definitely. I think the return of Kaká could be hugely beneficial, not just because of what he might bring on the pitch, but just because he's going to alleviate some of the pressure. You know, he's an older head. He's been to World Cups. He knows what he's doing. He's played in Champions League. He's done it all. So he can put an arm around Neymar's shoulders. He can tell him to calm down. He can tell him that it's not all down to him. They can share the load. And then the emergence of Oscar as well is going to help tremendously with that. So those two factors should help, because the pressure, I mean, we saw this week, didn't we? The ridiculous pressure he's under. He played for Japan, for Brazil against Japan on Tuesday. Immediately sort of did a Superman kind of costume change in a phone box somewhere, and flew back across the Atlantic to play for Santos on the Wednesday, and in a really tough game against Atletico, and then played brilliantly, you know.
And scored.
That's, that's insane pressure for a young player, you know.
He seems to like playing against Ronaldinho. He was easily the best player on the pitch in that game, whereas Ronaldinho had one of his quieter games.
Definitely. Well, it takes you back to that great Flamengo-Santos game of last year, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think as much as we come to expect Neymar scoring weekly in the Brazilian Championship, there seems to be something about playing against a man who's undoubtedly one of his idols that he just steps it up in those encounters. And there must be some kind of, additional, like, hormones running through his system or something for those encounters. But something about him just clicks.
Oh, for sure. There's a picture of Ronaldinho and Neymar kind of sort of doing mutual bowing to each other before the game, you know. So there's a great sense of maybe the sort of the generations passing on the torch, you know. Ronaldinho, I think, would probably like to get back in the Seleção at this stage, given how well he's playing. I don't think it's a good idea, but he knows Neymar is the future.
I think everyone in Brazil, from Ronaldinho to Robinho to Kaká, can all see that Neymar will be the one to take the mantle up next, or maybe he already has in the eyes of the worldwide audience.
Definitely. Yeah, well, I agree.
Well, we'll leave it there for the news section this week. Thank you very much for joining us, James.
No problem, Chris. A pleasure as always.
You can go to World Soccer Magazine's website. I'll link it in from the notes on this podcast to see James's article on Kaká and Neymar. Join us again next week when we'll be back to a full episode. We'll have Rio back once more, and hopefully we'll have a feat of you on one of the clubs in the Brasileirão this year. And any suggestions for content for the podcast, things you want to hear, or any questions for the team, get them into us on Twitter. You can contact me at Chris Elastico, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening.